Hey, Trojan fans, welcome to another edition of the Armchair Quarterback Podcast, our brand new podcast we started last week where we talk to former USC quarterbacks, get their impressions and their observations of what's going on with this USC football team. Last week, had a fun show. We got to talk to Sean Salisbury and Shane Foley. We got Shane on again this weekend. What's going on, Shane? How you doing?
Doing well, Ryan. Doing well. Good to be back on. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. It's fun. And if people, Shane and I were actually at USC about the same time. There's a whole, you can read his blog and get a lot more information about Shane Foley. Just go to ShaneFoley.com and he's got the Foley Report, which he puts up every week. And it's a great read. You can also follow him on Twitter at ShaneFoley_USC. That's all the correct information, right, Shane?
Absolutely. Thanks, Ryan, for having me. Also have the Foley Report on Facebook, so you can find me in any of those places.
Oh, nice. All right. So check it out. And when, you know, we wanted to talk to people that knew the game, that knew the program. And since there was so much controversy regarding the quarterbacks, we thought, wait, why don't we start a quarterback, armchair quarterback podcast where we kind of talk about things from the eyes of people that have done this before. And Shane, you've certainly done that, and we appreciate you coming on the show. And I guess maybe get your first initial thoughts. The interesting thing of this game was, this was the first time Cody Kessler played the entire game, because before it was either, you know, Cody Kessler and Max Wittick sharing, or Max Wittick coming in at garbage time. There was no garbage time in this one. This was all Cody Kessler all the time.
Yeah, that is true. And, you know, last week he was designated as a guy. He looked like a different Cody Kessler in last week's win over Boston College. And so this week coming in, clearly the guy after going 15 for 17. And so big game, and was his show, and, you know, certainly had the opportunity to go out and do his thing. Just a much different opponent, much different game, and just a much different flow in the game compared to last week against BC.
Yeah, very, very different. I mean, obviously it was close to the vest. If you hear Lane Kiffin talking afterwards, and it sounded a little to me, Shane, like what he talked about in the Arizona game last year, where, oh, I just missed that deep pass to Robert Woods by inches, and it seemed like that one play would have changed the fortunes of the entire season somehow. And he was saying similar stuff in this one where, oh, there was just a few off the fingertips or drop passes, just a few, and we were kind of right there. I don't know if you got that same sense. It didn't seem like this team was – I mean, it seemed like it was possible in the first half to kind of blow this open, but when it didn't happen, and I think it all comes down to, and Lane Kiffin mentioned this, that sack fumble, it seemed to kind of – compress the offense a little bit, like make it more conservative than it would have been. And then it just kind of, I guess it took the crowd out of the game because no one really was excited after that point.
Well, a lot of good points with that, Ryan. And I think certainly giving up three sacks in this game, that fumble was a big, I think, play that got Kiffin calling a more conservative game going forward, and probably had some concerns about the ability to protect Kessler on a consistent basis. But to your point about some of the just missed plays, and going back to the Arizona game last year, which was the turning point in the season, I think we've all been able to acknowledge that. But I think that, the just missed thing or making excuses for what could have been or should have been isn't going to cut it. I mean, at the end of the day, he's controlling the offense. He's running the plays. Take a look at the other side of the ball with what Coach Pendergast has brought to the team and the life, the energy, the passion these guys are playing with. Those guys are getting it done over there on that side of the ball. And, you know, he still has the responsibility for coaching the offense, and talking about what could be or what should be isn't really working for me. So, you know, right now, lot, you know, to look forward to 3-1, but it's going to have to improve. It's going to have to get better. And, you know, the passing attack, it has been called conservatively. I think there were probably four drops. I haven't gone back and looked at all the game yet, but certainly some drops. That Marquise Lee drop was a big drop as well. It was on the money, tough pass, and he placed the ball where it should have been. But I think going back to it, I just think that Kiffin has to really find ways to get these guys, you know, playing with the passion. And as you said, the life kind of came out of the air came out of the football, if you will, on that sack.
You mentioned the passing game, so we'll probably start with that since this is the armchair quarterback podcast.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So Cody Kessler, we'll go through the numbers real quick. He was 13 of 27. You did mention a bunch of the drops. So not a great percentage there. 164 yards, one touchdown pass. He had a 33-yard pass, was a long one. Sacked three times. There was a few fumble. I mean, he had the sack fumble there. But there was three other fumbles, two of them by Trey Madden, one credited to the team. And I think some of that had to do with the Wildcat stuff that was going on there when Kessler actually wasn't in. But what did you think of the way that Cody Kessler played this game?
Well, I think it just, it's a situation where, the first pass of the game was a drop to Jaleel Penner. Certainly it was just a short pass in the flat, but it seemed like it was an offense that never got in rhythm. They looked off kilter, looked like there were opportunities, in that first half especially, where we were running the football. Trey Madden got on track a little bit, making some plays and running hard. But we just never were able to get into a rhythm, especially in the second half. And I think some of the sacks that we've talked about already got him, kind of out of sync. And I think that he never really looked comfortable back there. And it was a situation where, again, having some of the drops that I think could have made different, made the outcome different, and certainly I think could have made him feel a little bit better. But, even getting out of the pocket, he didn't look as comfortable throwing the ball on the run as he had in the past. And certainly it was a defense that was playing well and inspired football and sitting, I think, a lot on the routes. It was another situation to me where I, really felt like even trying to flood zones and roll Kessler out to make plays, you had a defense that was really sitting on our offense. And we have to find ways, as they did with Grimble in the seam in the first half on the touchdown pass, which was a beautiful play, but find ways to continually get downfield and really take what the defense gives you. And I think that's something we're not doing a very good job of right now.
I think you make a great point, and I tweeted this out during the game. And if you just – it's funny when people say, if you want to watch football, don't watch the ball. And I try to – I end up watching the ball a lot, Shane, because, that's me. But I do try to watch the line sometimes and watch what's going on. And you could see a lot of early downs that – Utah State would bring guys up, that they would, cram the box a little bit. I don't know if they were playing an eight-man front all the time, but it seemed like they knew this play is going to be a run, and they kind of run blitzed, or they brought people up to stop that, and they dropped people back when they had to. But it to me, it was like, is USC telegraphing some plays here? Because it seems like the defense is sitting on what they think is going to happen, like you had mentioned, and it seemed like they knew what was coming almost. And obviously that makes it a lot easier to play defense if you're guessing or get information or whatever it is, and it's right.
Well, I think Utah State did a good job of really calling defenses to what Kiffin was calling on offense, meaning as Kiffin became more conservative with his play calling, I think Utah State definitely recognized that, moved more guys into the box, and really sat on our offense, really realizing that Coach Kiffin was calling a more conservative game plan. And so that was something I think that didn't work too well for us. And I think some of the concerns that you saw with some of the play calling and the conservative play calling, it was pretty much probably at the wrong time, because right then when the defense was playing physical, they were playing inspired. And I think you made a point of it on one of the Twitter feeds, saying you let a team hang around, a team that, has played in big games and has stepped up and played some bigger schools tough. You leave a team like that hanging around and they've got a chance to win. It gives them more hope and they're going to be fired up, and they played really toe for toe with the Trojans in the second half. And so, yeah, I think that was, on the defensive side though, Ryan, you've got to take what a defense gives you. And when they come up there and sit on that, you've got to find ways to stretch the field. And, again, I think it goes back to having confidence and belief in your ability to deliver. And I'm not sure that we saw that.
You've done this before, and obviously Cody Kessler's only got a handful of starts, four starts under his belt. You were around the program a long time. They trusted you. You and Todd Marinovich coming in. I mean, you were an experienced quarterback when you were in there playing. Not as much with Cody, but is there situations where you're looking under center and you're seeing the way the game's being called for you, and you're seeing what the defense is doing? Is there stuff that you would say to the offensive coordinator or your head coach, like, hey, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing this, can we change this up? And do you think that can be happening now with, Cody Kessler or Max Wittig when he's in there?
Well, that's a great question. I think it needs to be collaborative, because, as a quarterback or even the receivers out there, you're seeing what is happening on that field. You're studying the game, you're watching a lot of film. You know the tendencies, you know the personnel of who you're playing against. And so that's one of the things you should be just as prepared as a coach is playing quarterback on that field. You're the leader and the general on that team. And so I think that's a big part of it, Ryan, is you do have to collaborate. You do have to be up there. Clay Helton's up in the box. You got to be able to talk to him, what he's seeing, and collaborate on that and see guys where there's opportunities with matchups out there. You know these receivers. You know Mark Easley. You know Nelson Agholor. You've got your tight ends, and there's going to be one-on-one matchups, and you've got to take advantage of those, whether it's an out route, whether it's a go route, whether it's a post-corner route. I'm seeing these corners squat up on Marquise Lee in the second half, and the post-corner route, they got a safety in the middle of the field with one corner walked up. Now, they can run a go route, in which they did several times, without a lot of success, but where's the post-corner route where you push that guy inside, break it to the outside? I mean, that's a 35, 40-yard pass play opportunity, if not a touchdown, you know, with taking what the defense gives you. And so I'm just not seeing a lot of different routes. I'm not seeing a lot of pressure put on a defense that you really should be, that I expect to be seeing. But, you know, back to your point about it, I definitely think Kessler or Whittick, if he's in there, needs to be the field general and commander out on that field and be talking to the coaching staff, talking about what they can do and what they can get. But that receiver also needs to say, hey, look, let's get in the seam. You know, let's take a post-corner route. Let's not just do the go route. I mean, the go route's great, but, you know, doing that kind of thing, collaborating, is very, very important.
I think the post-corner would actually work really well. And, I wanted to, I guess this is a good segue to the question I had, but there was I think it might have been the long pass that Kessler completed to Lee, the 33-yard. I think it was this one, but the ball seemed to float in the air forever. And I've watched Kessler from when he was an Army All-American, and that's yep. The one thing I said. It's not a zip pass, but I think he's pretty accurate, and he's got nice touch on the ball. And I think for a route like that, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that's something that Kessler would probably throw pretty well, where you can throw out in front of the guy, and it seemed like it'd be good, a little better than throwing to a receiver that stopped and coming backwards, which it seems to be doing a lot.
Well, I think with a guy like Kessler, who may not have the arm that Whittick has, you want to be a rhythm passer. So you want to get back, there and throw the ball in rhythm. You want to be making these decisions before they're coming out of their break, whether it's an out, whether it's a crossing route, whether it's a corner route, anticipating and throwing the ball on the money, not getting back there as a scanner, sitting back, holding, because, you know, again, he's got a strong enough arm. He throws the ball a touch. People question his arm strength. I mean, I'm sitting around people at the Coliseum that are questioning his arm strength. You know, I've seen enough of him to know that he can make all the throws he needs to make. But again, it's a rhythm passer versus really being a drop back scanner, hold, pat, you know, and then deliver. And so you've got to be in sync and you've got to be on target. Yeah, it's important to be in continuity with your receivers, with Lee, with Agholor, with your tight ends, backs out of the backfield. Trey Madden caught one, you know, pass in the first half, but very little usage getting the ball to the backs out of the backfield as well. But that rhythm passing, I think, is something that they need to continue to work on and keep finding ways to really find isolation opportunities, whether it's with Lee in a one-on-one situation or Agholor, but getting those guys out there, not just on go routes that are lower percentage passes, but post corners, comebacks, deep comebacks, and, you know, flooding zones as well with, you know, with Marquise Lee and with the tight end underneath and a fullback progression.
So the Boston College game, it was an efficient day on offense. You know, Kessler was 15 of 17. Eight different guys caught balls. The ball was spread around. There wasn't a lot of bad plays. You couldn't say that against Utah State. I mean, he was, you know, under 50%. Only four different guys caught balls. Lee caught six of them. You know, they targeted Devon Flournoy once, which was kind of strange on a critical third down play. They didn't look like they're on the same page. It just didn't seem as it wasn't a well-oiled machine, I guess you could say, Shay. I mean, how could you attribute that from one week to the next with, I don't know if the defense was a ton better or whatever, but, you know, maybe it was. But from one week to the next, looking as efficient as they did and looked like they took a few steps forward, when now all USC fans are looking at Saturday's game and say, wow, the offense took a few steps back.
I think that it's a situation, clearly two different games and two different fields. Utah State was playing better football, and certainly, you know, as we've talked about, the longer the game stayed close, the more confident they got. And so that was a big part of it. But I think also a big part of it was we talked about Kessler being out of sync. We talked about the offensive line giving up some sacks. Running the football consistently, something we got away from. And that's that clearly in the, you know, in the fourth quarter, especially having field position football, you know, really it's been talked about already in the media, as you know. Having that ball and throwing three straight incomplete passes with the ball starting on the 34-yard line was puzzling. And so I think when you abandon the run like that and you're not running the ball effectively, even with, you know, the defense coming up and stacking against the run, you've got to be able to grind out 3, 4, you know, 5 yards of carry and move the line of scrimmage. And so that that's part of it to me, is we didn't run the ball consistently, especially in the second half. And then, you know, the other part of it is just a quarterback that really, you know, again, you said, I mean, he's played in 4 games now. This is still newer to him, still finding his way. When things come tougher like that, you've got to find ways to distribute the football, get the ball to different guys. I have said it since last year. Marquise Lee's a great talent. Got to find ways to have him stop dropping balls, because that's unfortunately become a pattern. As great as he is, you know, one of the best, you know, in the game. We talked about it last week. David Shaw called him the best receiver that he's seen on this level since Randy Moss. So, you know, you've got a lot of people that have been around the game a long time that talk about his ability. But I think, you know, you've got to find ways to get the guy the football. Marquise Lee's got to, you know, not find ways not to drop the football. And we've got to get it to more guys. We talked about it last week. You know, when we saw the success in 2011 going 10-2, you consistently saw the box, 8, 9 guys catching passes. Okay, that's what we saw. There wasn't somebody, you know, basically just sitting on a receiver or targeting, you know, Marquise Lee or, you said, Devon Flournoy, doing that. You've got to move the ball around. You know, what happened to Grimble? After that catch in the first half, we never saw a tight end route again. We didn't see anything. I mean, Telfer did have the one, one of the drops where Cody Kessler dropped that ball in there pretty nicely that would have been a big play as well. But it just seems like when things get tough and things aren't moving, we're not running the football, it really becomes a situation where we go back to doing what's safe, and the offense becomes less creative than more creative. And, you know, kind of going back to the same plays that just the defense sits on, and seems like they know they're coming.
I mean, a lot of good points there. And Lane Kiffin said Lee was not 100%. Marquise Lee said, I'm about 98%. So he didn't seem to be – Lee was playing off anything that he was slowed down by injury. But they don't really talk about injuries, so we can't really – just sure. However it looks out there, that's how he is. But the run game is an important part, too. We mentioned the offense, passing offense wasn't that efficient. Well, Trey Madden last week, you know, against Boston College, 16 rushes for 103 yards, 6.4 average. Right. Against Utah State, not quite the same. 24 carries, he netted 93 yards, you know, a 3.9 average. And, you know, there were some negative plays in there, too. Had a long of just 13. It wasn't that efficient, and I don't know if that's more effect, like the offensive line, or like you said, they kind of knew it was coming sometimes and they played that way with 8 men in the box, but it wasn't as efficient, just like the passing game wasn't efficient.
Well, you bring up a couple points that are very important, and the third down conversion in the second half was anemic. It was, you know, not even present. I think we were 0-for-8 in the third and fourth quarters. So we talked about it last week. You're not going to win games with third down conversion outside of turnover margins, the biggest statistic that you've got in football. And so that's not going to work. But running the football, you know, that we're talking about, you have to have toughness, and there's X's and O's and there's Jimmy's and Joe's. It's an old saying. So you've got to have guys that can come up and play physical smash mouth football, running downhill, tough, ornery offensive linemen that are moving the pile. You know, you take a look at, you know, teams that have been able to run the football. I mean, you can go back to Vince Lombardi. I mean, they knew he wasn't going to throw the football, and they actually, you know, move the pile and knock people out of the way, and then they get 5 yards of carry. You know, they get it done. That's the same thing, the same productivity that we need to have, even if they do move guys up in the box. You got a 220-pound Trey Madden who does run physically, that does break tackles, uses the palm drill, great balance, all those kinds of things. You know, we've got to have a better average than 3.9, even when they know that it's coming. And so I think that kind of physicality and that ability to move a pile, you know, even in the face of a defense that knows you're going to run it, not every time, but I mean, being able to do that. And then, you know, clearly when a defense is sitting up on our offense, on the Trojan offense, you've got to find ways to play action pass, because they know it's going to run, play action pass and take the deep ball and get the ball, move the ball downfield. when you've got a defense sitting there, they're sitting on routes. They weren't just sitting on a run game. They were sitting on routes, you know, on zone routes, you know, flooding zones and things like that. You've got to take some chances with getting the ball, you know, downfield and showing some more creativity with what we're running.
So you talk about the offensive line there. As a quarterback, when you go in, and there's a few interesting things going on with the offensive line. A bunch of guys coming back.
Right.
Sort of, you could say, underperformed last year. Retained the offensive line coach from last year, James Craig, but also brought in another one, Mike Summers. So that's an interesting aspect to have two. You start a freshman at left tackle. I mean, there was a lot of options there. I mean, Kevin Graf could have moved. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of experience there. You have two really guys with more experience, Andre Walker and John Martinez, now essentially sharing a position. Guys have moved over. Turek moving to guard. Having Mark Martin move into center. So there's a lot of things that have changed. There's a lot of, I guess you could say, interesting decisions, not saying good or bad, but if the offensive line isn't playing good and you see all these kind of decisions that might be a little strange, like what do you, as a quarterback, what do you say? Is there something you can say to be like, hey, I'm not sure what's going on here with the offensive line?
Well, I think you bring up some good points. You have to find continuity. These guys are playing together for the first time. I mean, you know, fourth game, but, you know, first time this year all playing together, you know, together in the year, as you're talking about, with Martinez and with Walker splitting time at guard. You know, Graf's a senior. You should see a lot of leadership and a lot of dominance from a guy that's been around the program a long time. Marcus Martin at center and Max Turk, as you said, at left guard. With Chad Wheeler, a redshirt freshman, playing a left tackle. And you're just, to me, you're still seeing too many missed assignments. You know, there's situations, you know, you've got missed assignments where guys aren't picking up blocks, where guys have free shots. I mean, Kessler got sacked on a play that, you know, really should have been Trey Madden picking him up, and he didn't get to him. It was a really, really a clean shot that they had on Kessler. So, I mean, that's a running back to me in that situation. But, you know, Chad Wheeler got beat on the sack badly, you know, where he got blindsided and fumbled the football and, you know, probably created a lack of confidence, you know, with Coach Kiffin in the passing game after that play. We talked a little bit about that. But these guys have to find ways to find continuity. I mean, a strong, ornery, tough offensive line. The mentality is part of it. You know, you got to have this mentality from your offensive linemen that are really bringing the heat, that are really, you know, playing the game, you know, and loving the game, playing together and decleating guys and getting downfield, picking up second blocks and having that desire. The other part of it that's equally as important is the mental aspect of it. And these guys have to be able to play together. The line call coming from Marcus Martin at center, they have to be able to, you know, get their guys in the right positions to be making those blocks and working together to pick up twists and stunts and blitzes.
Now, Shane, I don't want to like harp on the offense too much, but you know, you're a former quarterback and this is the Armchair Quarterback podcast. We want to talk about defense too, but I guess the concerning thing was, and I don't want to take too much of your time, Shane, but USC dominated two phases of this game, dominated on defense and dominated on special teams. Not that USC played all that, like, I don't think USC played great on special teams, you know, missing a field goal. It was some okay stuff, nothing really good in the return game. But Utah State was so bad on special teams that the USC offense benefited from short fields. And, you know, some of that came from the defense being able to get three and outs. A lot of three and outs I don't think we saw last year. This team is getting this year. But the USC offense had good field position and still wasn't able to manufacture a lot of points there. It's the sixth time in seven games, Shane, that the offense hasn't scored in the third quarter. So, I mean, we get all kinds of halftime adjustment of questions. And so I think that's why, I mean, I'm kind of focusing on the offense here, but certainly I think a lot of the fans are screaming, hey, what's going on with the offense?
Well, you bring up a lot of good points. What Coach Pendergast has done on the defensive side of the ball has been fantastic. I mean, we haven't seen this really in 4 years. It's been a long time since we've seen a defense really come up and play this type of just the physical attack and what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. And the kicking game, I mean, a shout-out to our punter. I mean, we put them inside the five-yard line twice, you know, really great field position. Played a lot of good field position football. And when you can't capitalize on the field position, that's a problem, you know, over the course of a game, and it can cost you a game. And certainly, again, having a team hang around that you should be putting, you know, the game out of reach with, it gives those guys – confidence, and it gives them an opportunity to come in and make a play at the end. to tie or to win a game, send it into overtime or to win the game. And so, yeah, you've got to take advantage of the opportunities in the field position part of this, you know, especially in the second half, having the ball really in their territory a number of different times, and not kicking field goals, not having opportunities to go down there and just punch it down there and scoring a touchdown, putting the game out of reach. You know, 17-14, we've got an opportunity to go down there, and you go down and put a touchdown on the board, and it's lights out. You know, game's over. And yet you're consistently having your defense, which is great, fantastic, by the way they're playing, the way they defended Chucky Keaton was phenomenal. So I think that but continually putting those guys out there, having to make plays with their backs to the wall, that's going to get a lot tougher to do as you go out on the road to Arizona State later in the year, to Oregon State, and playing, you know, teams like Stanford and UCLA. So they've got to get better, and they've got to get better quickly.
Now, you mentioned Chucky Keaton, and, you know, there was a lot of hype around Chucky Keaton. He was 21 of 39, 179 yards, a couple of touchdowns. You know, he finished with negative yards rushing, so it wasn't – I put an over-under on 61 yards. I thought they were going to run a lot more zone read with him and just have him kind of take off. We hadn't – this defense has played so well, but we haven't seen them play the kind of dual threat quarterback, but it's almost like Utah State took the dual part out of it. And he just wasn't seemed to be a threat with the run. And certainly there's great athletes chasing him. I mean, you had Morgan Breslin. He only had four tackles, but three of them for a loss. You know, Leonard Williams right. led the team with eight tackles. Three of those were for a loss. The defense obviously is flying around and playing phenomenal football. And like you said, you hadn't seen this for a couple of years, but were you surprised as how average Chucky Keaton looked when you know he's a really good quarterback?
I attribute it to the defense because he has been doing phenomenal things. I mean, completing 78% of his passes, 12 touchdowns and one pick, 550 yards averaging in total offense. You know, that's not a guy that just has lucked into that. I mean, he, you know, had a lot of success last year, 11-2 football team. So I really do give a lot of credit to Coach Pendergast and the defense that he's dialing up. I mean, the defensive line just has been a force to be reckoned with Breslin and Kennard on the outside, and with Leonard Williams and George Uko, Big George Uko. You know, these guys have been getting it done. And Hayes Ballard is a beast at linebacker, and certainly defensive back play. You know, obviously they're doing a lot of good things as well. Giving up a couple plays. I know that, you know, we saw him give up the long pass, you know, over Torrin Harris. But overall, the defense is really playing phenomenal. And so, like yourself, I was surprised we didn't see a little bit more zone read and trying to get down the line of scrimmage and putting pressure on the defensive ends to make a decision. But he got hit pretty hard pretty quickly and a lot. So,
good point.
You know, I don't know if that was something that the Utah State coaching staff made a conscious decision to not put him in a situation where he's going to get hit as much as he did, because clearly the pressure that USC was continually bringing and playing the game on their side of the line of scrimmage was, you know, was a situation where he was neutralized a lot. And even when he, you know, even when he wasn't touched per se, there was a lot of pressure getting him outside of, you know, making throws before he was ready to, and making throws outside of the pocket where he just wasn't clearly having anywhere near the accuracy that he had in the past.
Yeah. And you mentioned Torrin Harris. Whenever something happens to Torrin Harris side of the field, my Twitter feed blows up and people are not real happy with the way he's been playing. But even that long pass, I mean, I was watching it. He seemed like he was on the guy's hip, and it was a really well thrown ball to that sideline, and the guy made it extended. Like, I don't know. I mean, unless you were a deep safety making a play on that, I'm not sure he would have had a chance. And even the touchdown, I mean, it was a phenomenal catch. Like, if someone makes a phenomenal catch on you and you're right with them, I'm not blaming, at least for me, I'm not blaming the cornerback as much as he was getting blamed.
No, I'm not either, and certainly wasn't saying that, bringing that up to you know, to single him out, because I think that he, along actually with Lamar Dawson, are two of the improved guys on the defensive side of the ball. Lamar Dawson's playing much better football, and Torrin Harris was picked on a lot last year, as we know. And so I think Coach Pendergast has really elevated his game. He's taking the reins on playing much better football. And so, yeah, I don't point it, you know, at that situation. He did, you know, have a touchdown thrown on him too, but was also defending that very well. So, you know, you did see Kevin Seymour come back in the second half and play a lot of the second half, and who was the starter, obviously, before he got occurred against Hawaii. But I expect to see Torrin Harris back in there, and hopefully he'll stay confident and stay positive, because he has played much better football, and certainly in the Washington State game and in Boston College played very well, and certainly will be in the mix. But I agree with you. I think that he was positioned well, gave himself on his hip, and just made a great throw and a great catch. But, you know, he'll be back, and hopefully Coach Pendergast will keep him very involved.
Yeah, I feel bad for the guy. I mean, I like the guy, but for some reason he's been the one that gets – people just get on him on the – you know, it's like the defense is playing well, but they want to, like, yell at somebody, so they're going to yell at Torrin Harris. I guess one last thing before we let you go, unless you had something else, but the no turnovers in this game. So certainly the defense played well. They gave up a couple of big plays, which is fine. I mean, you can't expect the defense to play perfect, but any concern that they weren't able to force any turnover Saturday?
No, not really. I mean, because, you know, again, a quarterback that does make good decisions like Chucky Keaton did certainly, you know, completed about 50% of his passes. So I think they did a really nice job defending him. And you got to give a lot of credit to a quarterback that that plays the game well and makes good decisions, and they really defended him well. I think that it's an opportunistic defense. I think we will get back to getting some takeaways and making some big plays, both on the fumble side as well as interceptions. And so that was big, a big statistic. And, you know, I'll just say to your point about, you know, really jumping all over Torrin Harris, these guys are young men, and a lot of people forget about it. I mean, these kids, you know, 17, you know, years old with Justin Davis, but, you know, 18, you know, 21, 22-year-old kids. You know, they're trying to make plays. They're trying to get better. We have to have coaches that inspire leadership and have these guys, you know, want to play together, be Trojans. You know, they're coming here to play at a great university. And so I think that's something that they need to continue to do. But, you know, a lot of people are quick to, you know, to think about things in the past. And Torrin Harris obviously had a tough year last year. I think he is a different player. And hopefully, you know, being a great young guy, having an opportunity to come back and make some plays and contribute. You know, these guys, you know, a lot of people jumped all over Kessler yesterday. And, you know, to our point last week, a lot of people didn't think he could throw the ball 20 yards. So hopefully he'll bounce back and certainly, I think, with the play calling, be given more opportunities to succeed. And it's going to be a tough one in Arizona State this week. But I think maintaining, you know, winning the turnover battle, finding ways to convert on third downs, playing better, more physical football, and having that offensive line in good shape.
All right, Shane Foley. You can find him at ShaneFoley.com. Shane Foley underscore USC on Twitter. Thanks again, man. It's really fun. I think this is a cool new feature we're doing. I really appreciate that you wanted to come on and share your thoughts with us.
Hey, absolutely. Love talking USC football, and appreciate having the opportunity to come on and talk to your group and to do this armchair quarterback. Been a lot of fun, and look forward to doing it again.
Sounds great. Well, see, USC's taking on Arizona State on the road in Tempe next week, so we'll come back next week and talk about that. Thanks to Shane, and thanks, everyone, for listening in. We'll have our regular Peristyle podcast coming up Monday morning, as usual, with Harvey Hyde and Dan Weber. Stay tuned for that.